Okay, so we are at the bottom of Chaf Gimel on the base, starting with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom, where it says Ba'o Mine. Would you like the Gemara?
All right.
Okay, he's listening on. Okay, good. So Ba'o Mine, Rav Yosef, Breder of Nechunya, Mir of Yehuda. So Rav Yosef, the son of Rav Nechunya, asked the following question from the Yehuda. Maushi Aniach Adam Tfilav Tachas Mir Roshosav. Can a person go ahead and leave the tefillin under his head? Why is a person leaving tefillin under his head? What's this whole question? So we had discussed earlier in the Gemara and Brachos that there is a paramount importance to protect your tefillin, especially from people who might steal it, or from little rodents, which were more common in those days, and might walk away with them. Like, you know, nibble on the leather and start walking away with it. So one of the safest places, I guess, to leave your tefillin when you're resting is under your head. Any way a person would, if anyone would try and take it, it would be easily detected. So the question is that appropriate? Is that allowed? So he says, as he asks this question, he says, "Tachas margalosav lo kam vayli." I'm not even asking under your feet. That's not a question I'm asking. Shinhog behem minag bizayon. To put them there would be a complete, meaning it's somewhat of a protection, but it's really embarrassing. He come vayli tachas marshosav. Miroshosov, at least from his head, there it's a significant protection. Granted, it's not perfect kavod, right? Perfect kavod is in a safe. But at least it is a very good protection. Like you're trading a little bit of bizayon for a lot of protection. If you were like to weigh the, you know, they talk about like the pros and benefits, you know, the pros and cons or the risks and benefits, right? So, okay, so there's a lot of benefit here, more than maybe even the bizayon. So that's the question. You're allowed to do it. So the answer is, we started already. Okay. So we're in the bottom of Chaf Gimel on the base. So the answer, the question was, can you put the tefillin under your head and when you sleep? Can you put your tefillin and rest them under your head when you sleep in order to protect them? So Amar Le, Hachi Amar Shmuel, this is what Shmuel said to answer his question. Mutter, it is permitted to put the tefillin under your head. Afilu ishto imo, even if you are sleeping in the same bed with your husband and wife. So, in that case, it's allowed. So the Gemara says, Meitve, we have a question on this, what Shmuel just said. How can you have it under your head even when his wife is in his bed? Meitve, lo yaniach adam tefilav tachas margalosav. You're not allowed to leave your tefillin under your feet. Yeah, for sure not. Would you like to do Gemara? You want to play? If you want, it's up to you. Or you can just listen to everyone. Jeff, whatever works. Okay, I have to be very clear then. So we're discussing, so are you allowed to leave the tefillin under your head in order to protect them? Because in those days, there were rodents or people who might steal them. So the under your head when you're resting is the safest spot. So are you allowed to do it in order to protect your tefillin, or is it embarrassing? So Shmuel said, you're allowed to if your wife is in the bed with you.
Even
if the wife is in bed with him. So Gemara says, Meisei, we have the following question from the following Braisa. It says, Le'aniach adam tfilav tachas margalosav, you're not allowed to leave his phone under your feet, mitnei shenoig behem derech bizayon. That is an embarrassment. Aval manichan tachas miroshosav, you're allowed to leave his phone under your head in order to protect them. That is not as much of an embarrassment, and it is a much better protection. But if the husband and wife are together in bed, usher, that's not appropriate. That's not allowed because one thing can lead to another. But if you have, you're still not on the bed level, but on a separate stand, three tfachim above the bed, or three tfachim below the bed, considered to be on its own separate level, three tfachim is very considered to be a separate level, and then that is allowed to be there even when the wife is in, even if the husband is together with his wife. Now, we're going to say later in the Gemara, Daf Chafei, that means, number one, the tefillin is not exposed. They have to be in a double covering, which is called Kli B'toch Kli. They have to be a covering, like a tefillin bag, inside of a tefillin bag. If your tefillin are inside the bag, which is inside another bag, and they are not the same level as the bed, according to this Braisa, they're allowed to be in the room. So you can protect them, you can watch over them, and one can even be, as a husband normally is with his wife in his bed, that's normal, it's allowed. So the Gemara says, Tiyufta de Shmuel Tiyufta. This Bryce says, clearly against Rav Yehuda, who said you can have it under your head, even with your wife in bed. So the Gemara then says a very interesting thing, which is, Amar Rava, Rava says, Afal gav de Tanya Tiyufta. Even though we brought a Bryce, remember, a Bryce is written by the Tanaim. The Tanaim are those same rabbis who wrote the and are discussed in the Mishnah. The generations of the Tanaim are the earlier generations, and the generations that's the rabbis who are mentioned in the Mishnayos and in the Brises. Then there's a second subsequent generations afterwards, which are those rabbis who are discussed in the Gemara, and those are the Amoraim. So Rava says, "Afagav the Tanya Tiyufta." The Shmuel, even though we brought a Brisa from the earlier sources against Shmuel explicitly, nonetheless, Hilchas Kavase, the Halacha is like Shmuel, which is very unusual, because normally we say that when the Gemara wants to have an Amora, he has a certain opinion. So either he has to make sure that there's some prior source that is not opposed to what he's saying, or he has to show that there's some earlier Tana or some early Tanaitic source, a Brisa or a Mishnah, which supports his opinion. And here, we have the exact opposite. We have a Tanaitic source which is explicitly against Shmuel, and yet we say Allah is like him, which we're going to say, why is that? And the Gemara says, my time, why should we paskin like Shmuel even though there's an explicit source against him? The answer is, kol linatrinhu fei adif. Anything you do which provides the tefillin more protection is better. Meaning, what's the halacha saying? That we have to protect our tefillin, and that is of our number one priority. And so it happens to be that there isn't a source for Shmuel, because the earlier sources contradict him. But nonetheless, he is allowing for his opinion, allows for greater protection of the tefillin. That's why we follow him la halacha. Now, my brother-in-law, Morty, who's going to give the Iyun Chabur afterwards, is going to discuss that's a very unusual thing, to have the situation that a Mora is able to argue on the Tanakh sources on the earlier generations. Usually we like, for example, we give honor, we give sort of deference to earlier generations when there's certain cutoffs, like the Amoraim don't argue with the Tanaim, the Rishonim don't argue with the Amoraim, the Achronim don't necessarily argue with the Rishonim. So he's going to discuss that topic, that issue, how exactly that is the case, that our Gemara makes any sense. Okay. So let's go on. I'm not going to delve into it because I'm going to leave that for him to discuss later. Okay, so the Gemara says, V'hecha manachunu. So wait, you said you're allowed to put it under your head, but exactly where are you putting the tefillin? Right? Yeah, directly. So the Gemara says, Amar v'yirmiya, ben kar l'kesef. So you should put it between the pillow, under the pillow, and the sheet. Shelo k'neged rosho, but off to the side. So if you have a pillow, and your head's in the middle, you put the tefillin under the pillow, but off to the side. That's protection, and not such a bizayon as much. So the Gemara says, V'hatani, Rabbi Chiya, Manicham Bikova Tachas Mirashosav. Rabbi Chiya said, you put them in a bag right under your head. Sounds like right under your head. So how that's against Rabbi Yirmiya. Gemara says, Zematikle Lemorsa Bikova Labar. No, you know, you have a tefillin bag. The tefillin bag is usually bigger than the tefillin, and the tefillin is often off to one side. So there's a bulge in the bag and then the flat part of the bag. So what he's referring to is that the bulge of the bag is off the side. You're not putting your head on the bulge, which is directly on the tefillin. You're allowed to put your head on the flat part of the bag, which is still the tefillin bag. It is tashmishe kedusha, right? Something that is used for the tefillin, which are kadosh, but you're not directly on the tefillin itself. And that is what Rabbi Yehuda was talking about when he said you can put your head on the bag. So Gemara says, Bar Kafra, what he would do is, he would go ahead and put the tefillin in, sort of wrapping in this like side of canopy on the side of the bed, and he would position them when they're on the side of the bed outwards, as to be less of a bezayon. Rav Shisha Brei, Rav Idi, Manach Luhu, Ashar Shifa. He would rest the tefillin on, like some people have at the foot of their bed, a little bench or something like that. And he would put his tefillin at the end of his bed on that bench, on the little couch or something like that. And uparis sudra alayhu. They're inside.
Like an ottoman.
Yeah, something like an ottoman at the foot of his bed. He would leave them there. And he would then cover them with a sheet. Because, the Rishon son, because that would be, they're inside the tefillin bag, he would put an additional covering on top of them. Now they're considered to be in a double covering, so that he was able to leave them in the room, and of course, if the husband's with his wife, not a problem either. Okay. Sorry? They don't keep to be by the feet, but not under the feet. To be under the feet, we said, would be a bizayon, but not to be at the admin, which is mean near. Maybe I'm not understanding the question.
If either here, like
this is on the ottoman or the bench at the foot of the bench. Separate structure. Yeah, that's okay. But he shouldn't be resting his fill-in on exactly. Or even if there's a even if it's feet and then there's a pillow and then there's fill-in, that would be also inappropriate. You cannot have the fill-in under the sheets under your feet, or in the under a pillow under your feet. Under the feet is completely embarrassing. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Amar of Hamnuna, Breder of Yosef. Zimnachad Havika Amina Kame de Rava. There was one time where I was with Rava. Right. So the Hamnuna says I was with Rava. The Amarli, and he said, Rava said to me, I see the tefillin. Go bring me my tefillin. So he went to his house. He went to Rava's house. The Ashkechinu ben kar lekeset. And they found that the tefillin were between the pillow, Rava's tefillin, in his house, in his bedroom, or between his pillow and his sheet. Shlo keneged brosho, off to the side. Just like who? Just like Yirmi explained earlier, was the proper way to properly protect and guard your tefillin, and also not derech bizayon as much. Vahayyadana, and I also knew, Rav Hamnuna saying is, I also knew the Yom Tfilah Havet, that it was a time of the mikvah. So Rashi claims to me that this, he happened to know that the night before was the night that his wife went to the mikvah, and they were together, and nonetheless, he had finding his fill under the pillow, he learned, as we'll see, why did he do this? It's because Rava wanted to teach Rav Hamnuna the practical halacha that we follow the opinion of Shmuel, because Shmuel told us, we said the halacha is like Shmuel, and he's trying to tell him how the halacha is like Shmuel, and we practice like that, meaning one can put the tefillin under the pillow to protect them, even with wife in his bed. That's allowed. Now, from here, from this source, the Shulchan Aruch, or the Beis Yosef, points out is the source for when the Torah says, and when the Torah passes and says that it is appropriate, the proper thing to do, that the night of the mikvah, that the husband should be together with his wife that night. And he says this Gemara is the source, because you see that he put two and two together. He knew that was that his wife had gone to the mikvah, and he sees the tefillin on the bed. He knows what happened between the lines, and that is a source that is the proper, that's the proper thing to do. Now, some Rishonim, it's the Talmid de Rabbi Yona asked, how in the world would Rav Hamnuna know that Rava's wife went to the mikvah the night before? Now, because normally, you know, we don't publicize. That's the kind of private information the husband keeps to his wife. He's not supposed to let people know. It's saying that especially like sometimes there are situations where like you're visiting other people away for Shabbos, and it's a mikvah night, and they have to go, so you try and limit who finds out. You know, you really try. It's not the kind of thing that we generally publicize. What's going to mikvah that night? The mother generally doesn't publicize it to the kids and go out to the mikvah. They figure it out, or they know whatever, but they don't. So how did Rav Hamnuna know? So they say, it's like different situation. And actually connects to something we learned earlier in the Masechta. They didn't know that Rava's wife went to mikvah. They knew something else. He knew that Rava went, it doesn't say Leil Tfilah. When did the women go to mikvah? At night. Here the Gemara says, I knew it was Yom Tfilah, the day of the mikvah. Now, women don't go to mikvah during the day. So the Talmid Rabbi Yonah says, the Gemara is very precise here. It refers to not his wife going to the mikvah, but Rav Hamnuna saw Rava go to the mikvah during the day, meaning that morning. Why? And that's, he would normally see that. Why would he do that? Why would he go to the mikvah in the morning? So we learned early in the Masechta that there was the Gzera. Now, granted, nowadays we were not, and the Bnei Israel did not accept to continue this decree, but there was the Sakanas Ezra. That person would not be allowed to learn Torah. if they were a Baal Keri, if they had an emission, and therefore they would have to go to the mikvah first. So if you saw specifically his Rebbe going to the mikvah in the morning, he knew there was a reason why he went to the mikvah. And that's how he put two and two together, without compromising any private information, but nonetheless, the halacha was able to be transmitted. So you see, the Rebbe was trying to transmit what is the halacha lemaisa to his Talmud. Okay. So Baimine, we're going to continue in the Gemara, where it says Baimine. So we have another question. Baimine, Rav Yosef, Reidim, Nechunya, Mir, Rav Yehuda. Same exact person asking the question that we had before. He's asking Rav Yehuda, same like before. So before he asked the question about filling under the head, now he's going to ask a different question. He says, Shnai Mishain in the Mita Acha. You have two people sleeping in the same bed together. Ma'u Shazay Yachter Panavikar Kriyashma. So now it's time, they're going to sleep, it's bedtime. They're in the same bed, they're sharing a bed. Is one allowed to turn, now in order to say Krishna, we're assuming they're not clothed in this situation, can they turn away from each other, can they turn away from each other to say Krishna? Shizei yachter pana v'yikari Krishna, v'zei yachter pana v'yikari Krishna. Each one turning away from the other. The Gemara says, Amar lei, hachi amar Shmuel, afiu ishto imo. Same kind of answer. Shmuel says, yes, one can do that. And even, not just for a regular person, like if there's another individual there, but even with one's wife, a person, each one can turn the opposite way, so their backs are to each other, and say Kriya Shema. Now, first of all, what is the problem with facing each other? Because that is the Makom Erva, that's the place of the private, that there could be more, that the problem is the person, Rashi says, well, person will have Hirhurim, who will not have proper concentration, to say Kriya Shema. So she'll turn away, and they'll be able to have the proper concentration. So the Gemara continues and says, that's Shmuel's opinion, that you can turn away for a regular person, even for one's wife, that's allowed. So Matyafla Rav Yosef asked the following question, Shmuel, Ishto Veloma Bay Acher, Shmuel, you're saying that one's wife you're allowed, but certainly someone else? He says, no, the logic is the exact opposite. Adraba, Ishto Kugufo, a woman is like his own body, the acher lavke gufo, and another person is not like his body. Now, this doesn't mean in a halachic sense. We mean this in the sense Rashi explains is that a wife and his body are very, they're more used to being together, and therefore, if he turns his back to her, he will not be able to focus on his Kriya Shema, but another person, he might be aroused, and therefore will not be able to concentrate. Now, that's one shot, that's Rashi's shot, that worried about his hirurim, but worried about any kind of thoughts he might have, a list of thoughts. Now, or desires. The thing is that we're about to say that this situation, we're about to discuss being in bed, not with a random person, but with family. And that we're going to distinguish between a wife and other family members. Now, the thing is, the person's going to have hirurim about his other family members, his son, his little daughter. It doesn't make sense. So what the other Rishonim explained is that it doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about hirurim, meaning right, the thoughts of desire, but instead just uncomfortability. Meaning, if one's flesh is touching another person's flesh, sometimes it's just uncomfortable. Like you're just sitting next to someone in shul, and for a moment the leg touches another leg, it's just you move away because it's uncomfortable. But to your wife, where it's common that you're used to sleeping together in the same bed generally, and if your skin is touching, it doesn't really distract you. Not in the sense of desire, just in feeling awkward. So they explain it as awkward, meaning when you're in bed with someone else, that's awkward, and therefore you can't see Krishna, so you face away from each other. There's that way there's at least some sense of privacy, even if the skin might be touching or close. Whereas if you are with your wife, that would be fine. So the Gemara says like this. Excuse me, I need to be clear. With one's wife, you can turn away, even if the skin is touching, because that touching isn't going to lead to him being uncomfortable. But if you're with someone else in bed, this is what he's saying, Rav Yosef is saying, but if you're with someone else in bed, there'll be a level of discomfort, just being awkward. Even if you're facing away from them, if the skin is touching, because you're touching someone else's skin, who you normally don't touch, it's uncomfortable, it's awkward, you're not going to have kavana for your Kriya Shema. Okay, so that would be not allowed. So the Gemara asks the following question. It says in the Brisa, Shnayim Shein B'mita Achas, two people are sleeping in the same bed. So each one can turn away from each other and reach Kriya Shema, like we just said. So that sounds like two people. They can turn away. Another Brisa says, Hayoshim b'mita, a person sleeping in bed, ubanav ubnei beso b'tzido, and he's sleeping in bed with his children, his family members are in bed with him. Hareza loikar krishma, you cannot read krishma. El la'im came, haisatali mafsekes b'neim. He has to actually take a sheet, take some kind of partition, and make it between them. So they're not, some kind of separation between them in order to take krishma. It's not good enough to simply turn away. You actually have to make a partition, a physical barrier between the two. Exactly. That's certainly allowed also. We're looking at the, you're right, you're 100% correct. And certainly, if you'll have better kavana that way, you should. We're talking about what is the minimum you can do. The minimum is have a physical separation, and you don't get out of the bed. Now, the Gemara says, v'yum hayu banav ubnei beso kitanim, but if those children are little, they're minors, then mutter, you don't even have to turn away. In that case, you can say krishma in the same bed. But the Braisa does say that if they're older, any other family member, you can't just turn away, you have to actually put a physical partition. The first Braisa says you just turn away. The second Braisa says you have to put a physical partition. You have a contradiction between the two Braisas. The Gemara says, Bishlam Rav Yosef. According to the opinion of Rav Yosef, remember Rav Yosef distinguished between the one's wife, where there you can turn away. But by other people, you cannot turn away. You have to actually be physically separate. So Rav Yosef would say, Lo kasha, there's no contradiction between two brises. Ha b'ishto ha b'acher. One brise, the brise which says that you can simply turn away in the same bed, that refers to with one's wife. With one's wife, you can be in the same bed, turn opposite each other, and say krishma. But b'acher, with other family members, that's the other brise. The brise says, with other family members, not good enough, you have to put physical separation. And that is the distinction between the two Brises. One talking about one's wife, one talking about everyone else. But the Gemara says, El Shmuel Kashab, according to the opinion of Shmuel, Shmuel says, no, for anybody you can turn away. And even your wife. By anybody, Shmuel says, you simply can turn away, turn your face opposite each other, and you can go ahead, your body's opposite, and you can say Kriya Shema. So how does he explain this contradiction in the two Brises? So Shmuel says, Rav Yosef minicha. Wait a second. We said there's no contradiction according to Rav Yosef. Is that really true that there's no contradiction according to Rav Yosef? The Hatanya haya yashin b'mita ubanav. Sorry, ubnei beso the bach is not the word ubanav. Ubnei beso b'mita loikar kishma elim kenaisa talisim of second b'neim. That second brisa. What did we say? We said that second brisa refers to not his wife. But that brisa refers to b'nei beso, the family members. Isn't his wife also included in that category of family members? It is. Normally you would say family members means wife, children, that's family members. And the brisa says you have to have physical separation. So Shmuel says you can't say that brisa is referring to not his wife. There's no indication that brisa is referring to only his family members except for his wife. So he says that brisa is equally a problem for me and equally a problem for Yosef. Rather, what do you have to say? The only way to reconcile this, well, not to reconcile, to understand these two brises, is to say, Tanaihi, Lememra Ishto Lerv Yosef Tanaihi. According to Yosef, if one's together in bed with one's wife, and you want to say Kriyashma, it is a machlokas, it is a debate between the two brises. They are not able to be reconciled, and it's simply two opinions among the Tanaim. One opinion in the Tanaim is that you can turn away and you can say krishma. The other opinion in the Tanaim is that you have to actually have physical separation. So Shmuel says, same is true for me. I would say the same thing. That for me as well, l'didinami tanaihi. For me, it's also a machlokas. It's an argument between the Tanaim. Some say you can simply turn away from each other. That would be like my opinion. And some say you can't turn away. You have to actually have a physical separation by anybody. Okay. So that is the machlokas basically between, just to be clear, between Rav Yehuda, Shmuel, who says anybody you can turn away, and the second thing would be Rav Yosef, who distinguishes between one's wife. There's a level of comfort, and the person can simply turn away and say krishma in the same bed. But as opposed to other people, Rav Yosef would say other people, you have to have physical separation. And then finally, there's this other opinion of the Tanaim out there. There's some other opinion out there, which does say that for anybody, even one's wife, even anyone else, for everybody, if you're wanting krishma, you have to have a physical separation, physical barrier. Okay. Now, the Gemara does not come to a conclusion here. We'll see later on. It's going to ask what the halacha is. But the Gemara says, ultimately, the Psach Halacha is, since there are three opinions, and it's not clear who we end up with, we follow the stringent opinion. And the stringent opinion here would be like that opinion of the Tanayim, who says that for anybody in bed, you have to have a physical separation. So you cannot be in bed with someone and both are unclothed and say Krishna, even if you turn away. You have to have a physical separation between your body and any other body. Okay. Amar Mar. Now, this is obviously separate from simply not having private parts exposed. We don't mean that you are uncovered in bed. You're being covered in bed. Your body is covered. Yeah. A person has the private areas covered by the sheets. The point is that if there's another person in bed, there has to be a physical separation between that person and you. That's what we're saying. Just to be clear. So Amar Mar. So we're up to two dots now. And the Gemara says as follows. Amar Mar. Zemachzir panav v'kari kriyashma. Mar had said, right, the opinion had said, that you turn away from each other and you say kriyashma. The Gemara says, v'haika agavo. But wait a second. We know that we said you can't be facing each other because there is an erva, right? There's the private area in the front. So you can't be facing each other. But when you turn away, you're touching. What's touching? The buttocks, right? The backside. Right. And the backside, right, isn't that a problem? That should also be a problem of erva. The Gemara says, yet, we say you can turn away. So it must be the backside is not considered to be a halachically private erva area. So the Amr of Huna, agavos, Avuna says that the backside, Ein Behemishun Erva, is not considered to be halachically the same as the front. It doesn't have a halacha, it's not considered status of Erva. The Gemara said, Lema Mesaile. Now, this is important because remember, you have to have the Erva covered, the private areas covered, in order, whatever is considered private, in order to say, Dvar Mishav Kedusha, Kriyashma, Abracha, right?
Yeah, but the whole thing doesn't make sense. Why would you be in bed with another person? Especially if you're naked. Combination according to Jewish law.
No, no.
The child can't see you naked. So you have problems with the guest.
No. They're covered by sheets. Under the sheets. They're not seeing each other.
Right.
They're not, like, meaning they're in the bed together, but covered by the sheets.
Yeah, but are they using the same sheet for both of them, or they each one has their own sheet?
Presumably they have the same sheet in this case.
That's what I'm saying. So that's a problem. Because, first of all, a child cannot see the father naked. Second of all, two men cannot go in one bed because it's abomination.
No, we're not referring to them. Even talking about kids. No, kids under the Gemara. The Gemara was talking about kids.
Why don't they just say, just get out of the bed and do whatever you got to do and then come back? It doesn't make sense. They should do that because the thing is, when you say the minimum, there's always going to be more and there's always going to be arguments all over the place. This way, say, is it culture or not culture? Not culture, that's it. It's not. That's it. You know, no excuses, no muslim call.
Yeah.
As soon as you give leeway, you have a whole big argument all around it. Come inside, they argue, and they're arguing the Gemara. They can go for 10 pages and then find out this Rav Nachman they're talking about. He's from totally from another country to begin with.
No, so it's right. The purpose of the Gemara is trying to clearly define where the border of the halacha is, and to define, not to try and define it that we're not going to really precisely understand the halacha. We're just going to say, well, for sure, for example, if you're in a different room, it's for sure okay. That would be good to know, but that wouldn't precisely define the halacha. The purpose is to better understand exactly what were the considerations which led to being to have a necessary separation. So therefore, when we come to decide, well, what do you need to be considered physically separate, you understand what was the concern when there was no separation. Is it about physical touching? Is it about uncomfortability? Is it about seeing things?
So once you define
what clearly is a problem, then you know what to do to fix it.
If you want to say anything, you want to die, you should be properly, covered. That's the basic.
No. You're covered under sheets. So understand, you have to be completely covered. We said that. So what the Gemara is discussing now at our stage of the Gemara is whether the backside is considered to be an area that has to be covered in order to say a bracha, in order to say kriyashma. So the Gemara is saying that this supports Rav Yehuna, who says that the backside is not considered to be erva. And what is the proof to Rav Huna? The proof to Rav Huna is, it says, ha'isha, we have a Mishnah and Chala, which says, ha'isha yoshevet v'kotzela chalasa. So a woman can go ahead and sit with the dough, take off, she can be mafresh challah, right? The woman has to take off a piece of the dough, from the challah, from her dough. Sorry, a piece of the dough called challah. Right, that's one of the matnas kahuna. That's what the kohen gets. Or nowadays we burn it because we don't have a kohen and we give it to. And she can do so aruma. Now, why she's doing it aruma? I don't know why she'd be doing it aruma, but she's doing it without clothing. Because when she's sitting on the ground, she's able to cover her makom erva, her private area, because of the way the anatomy is, such that the ground is covering it. But it's not covering the backside.
Right.
Which, right? So you see from there that the backside is not considered to be erva, because what do you do when you are mafresh challah? You make a bracha. So she can go ahead and mafresh challah, make a bracha, even though the backside is exposed, it seems like, from Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah says, of a lo ha'ish, a man cannot sit in the ground without clothing and be mafresh challah, make a bracha, because his private parts are not going to be covered by the ground. They're exposed. They're pointing in a different direction. So since that's the case, a man cannot say it. But you see from this Mishnah, it's a proof that the backside is not considered to be a makom erva in order to not say a bracha. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a proof. Targum of Nachman bar Yitzchak kagon sheyu paneha tuchos bekarka. No, it wasn't like a flat ground. It was where the ground, she was sort of like dug into the ground. And
wow.
So the ground and the soil was coming up around her, and it even covered her backside.
Wow.
Even covered her backside. And therefore, that she was allowed to be mafresh challah and make a bracha. But we're left in doubt whether or not, according to Huna, the backside is not considered to be a makom erva, but the Mishnah is not proof to his opinion. Okay, the Gemara says as follows. Amar Mar, another statement. Im hayu banav ubnei deso kitan and mutter. We said that if you're in bed with older children, you have to have a physical separation. If you're in bed with your smaller children who are ketanim, who are still minors, you can say krishma with them in bed. Now the Gemara says, akama, until what age can you say krishma with them in bed? So Amar of Chister, Chister says, tino kesbasha gimel shanim. With a girl, it's until the age of 3, v'yomechad, meaning one day after the age of 3. V'tino kventesha shanim v'yomechad. And a boy, until the age of 9 and one day. What are those ages relevant to? That is when they are old enough where their body is considered to be able to have bia, to have a relation, physical relations, and have a halachic status. Now, that because already that's the age that they can have a halachic status of having relations, physical relations, then that is why at that age they have to have a physical separation. And their erva, their own erva, is enough. Because as you know, like little babies run around with diapers. No one thinks twice about it. You have your kid running around with a diaper sometimes, and it's not an arousal, it's not an erva, because of their young age. So, but when they get to the ages listed here already, it is more substantial, and then you have to have physical separation. Ikadamri, another opinion says, no, a little older age. Tinoket basyud al shana v'yom echad. By a girl, it would be 11 in one day. V'tinok ben shteim asher shana v'yom echad. And by a boy, it is 12 in one day, meaning a year before the bar bat mitzvah. V'idi v'idi, and with both a boy or a girl, what it really is getting to is ad kidei, it's quoting a pasuk in Yechezkel. So ad kidei shadayim l'chonu v'sarech t'meach. What it really means is until the point that they physically develop, meaning we're not worried about halachic erva, halachic tashmish. What we're referring to is when the body physically develops, once the child is already physically developed, there's already hirurim, there's already potential for being uncomfortable in the same bed. And that's at that point when you cannot say Kriya Shema without a complete physical separation. At an earlier age where their bodies are undeveloped, doesn't have the same situation, and therefore one is allowed even without physical separation according to that opinion. So, Amar Rav Kana, Le Rav Ashi. So Rav Kana asked Rav Ashi the following. Hasam Amar Rava. Now earlier we had said that Afagav de Tiyufta, Rava said, the Afagav de Tiyufta Shmuel, even though Shmuel was disproven, when it came to sleeping with tefillin under your head with one's wife, we said he's disproven, but we followed the halacha like him. So the question is, Hachamai, what about here? Shmuel said that you can go ahead and sleep, say Krishma by turning away from one's wife or anyone else in bed. Do we also follow like Shmuel here as well? So the Gemara says, no. Amarle, atu kulu b'chada machta machtinu. Do we learn all these halachos like in one package, such that when we said halachos like Shmuel, we meant the entire package? No, elahecha ditmar itmar. Wherever Rava said the halachos like Shmuel, that's where it was said. Vahecha de loitmar, but where Rava did not say the halacha, he didn't explicitly say the halacha is like Shmuel. In this other case, when it comes to saying Kriya Shema, we don't say that halacha is necessarily like him. And as we said before, because it's not clear from the Gemara who we follow, we take a more stringent approach, and you always have to have a physical separation in order to say Kriya Shema in Bet. So Amr Leis, so now we're up to we're just for the two dots and towards the bottom of the page. Amr Le Rav Murray Le Rav Papa. So Murray said to her papa, Se'ar Yose Bibigo Mahu. Okay, so what if some, not the erva exposed, but what if the pubic hair, some the hair is exposed? So is that something that has to be covered for Kriya Shema? If a hair is sticking out of the garment, would that be a problem for Kriya Shema? So Karu Le, he called him Se'ar, like hair, like it's hair there, like hair's hair, doesn't really mean it. Right, hair there. So, therefore, in that situation, if you have hair exposed, that's nothing. It's not meaningful. You can have Kriya Shema if the hair is popping out of the zipper or something like that. Not an issue. Okay. So, Amr Le Rav Yitzchak. So, right now, it's two dots. So, Amr Le, it's the bottom of the page. Amr Rav Yitzchak. This is, you came time for the most famous part of the Gemara. So, this is well-known Gemaras, and if you don't know well-known it's you'll hear it tonight, and I'm sure you'll be familiar with it going forward. Or you'll once we say it, you'll know it. So Amr of Yitzchak, tefach b'isha erva, one tefach, right? One hands breadth, so like 4 inches approximately of a woman is erva, is something which is considered to be an erva. Now, does that mean women have to walk around with burkas, right? Only this much is allowed of their whole body to be exposed. So the Gemara is going to try to figure, what does that mean when Rav Yitzchak said that even one tefach cannot be exposed. It's an erva. It's a private area. So the Gemara says, wait a second. Lemai. What did he mean that regarding? So elema, if you want to say listakuleba, if you say that we're talking about where you gaze upon a woman, and when I use gaze, I don't mean just looking, noticing. I'm referring to a lusting, a looking at in the way that you are, becoming desired. So if that's the case, the ha'amr of sheshes, Lama mana kasav tachshitin b'chutzim tachshitin shvifnim. Let's just explain for a second. B'nai Yisrael, after the whole situation, right, with Midyan, where there was the daughters of Midyan were coming to B'nai Yisrael and they were having forbidden relationships, and they attacked Midyan. They fought a war, and in order to do kapara for the immoral acts that the B'nai Yisrael did with the daughters of Midyan, they took all the bounty of the war, all this when they conquered. And they got all of their jewelry. They took all of it, and they said, "We want nothing of it. We're donating. We're giving it all up to essentially the Mishkan. We're donating all of it. We're giving it out. We're not taking any of it." And when it lists all the things that they didn't take, it lists together some of those jewelry, which would be on exposed areas, like earrings or a ring and a hand, with other types of jewelry that they had. They had some interesting jewelry, which were even in private areas of the body. Why would they list both together? Because they're doing kapara for private things. So the Gemara says, teach us a lesson. To tell you, lomar lecha kol hamistakel be'etzba ketana shel isha. If a person gazes, again, looks lustfully, even after the pinky of a woman, and that arouses him, it's kilu mistakel makam atoris. It's as if he looks at her most private area. Again, it's the same thing, because the arousal is the problem. Wherever one looks at him, he becomes aroused, is going to be equally a problem. So why would we say a tefach? Even a pinky nail, even the slightest little bit could be a problem, would be something which would be inappropriate to gaze upon. The Gemara says that the context of Rosheshes can't be simply gazing. Ella, the ishto, it's in fact referring to one's wife, a tefach of one's wife, gula kriyashma. So Rosheshes is saying is that you cannot have more than one tefach of one's wife exposed in an area which is normally covered, and then say Kriya Shema. So if one's wife normally, certain areas are normally covered, now normally if you're not saying Kriya Shema, one's allowed to gaze at his wife, right? That's normal. And you're allowed to have desires, right? That's okay with your one's wife by looking at her. That's okay. But when it's not, when we're talking about something that's normally covered and you're saying Kriya Shema, even one tefach, that one tefach cannot be uncovered of an area that is normally covered. So it's a whole discussion exactly which areas have to be covered. Generally speaking, a woman's hair is covered. So does that mean if a woman's hair is uncovered, can he say Kriya Shema? Can he say Abdallah? Can he say Kish? So, also nowadays, there's a big discussion in the post-kin, because nowadays when it comes to hair, it's much more common that there are women who don't cover their hair. So is nowadays, do we distinguish, some post-kin nowadays say that, in front of women's hair being uncovered, one perhaps can say Dvarim Shekedusha. Doesn't mean that the woman is allowed to uncover hair. That's a different discussion. How much of the hair is allowed to be uncovered? Whether you have a sheitel, how much of a sheitel do you have? I'm not getting into that discussion. But those poskim who distinguish on the level of the person saying Kriyat Shema, for the man. They're saying, for the man, perhaps nowadays, because we're much more used to being around women who have their hair uncovered, that to say Kriyat Shema or other Dvarim Shekedusha in front of a woman whose hair is uncovered may be allowed nowadays.
Make the woman more attractive than her own hair.
So I'm saying, I'm not getting into discussion of what's proper for the woman, but I'm discussing, and you're right, and there are some people who say, things from Sfarim hold this way, that sheitel is not an option. You have to cover the hair with a different type of cover. That's not like hair.
No.
But I'm not getting into that. So I'm discussing for what's okay for the man who's in Kriyat Shema. The halacha here, as stated, is that any tefach being covered is a problem. The tefach over here by the collarbone, if it's uncovered in front of him, it's a problem. And they suppose can say, and certainly by another woman. We were talking about his wife, but even obviously by another woman be inappropriate. Okay.
So wife's hair in her house, I mean, that's not the airflow, it's different levels of airflow in the house. That just she was talking about this other woman, right?
It is, so she was talking about another woman.
Yeah, they're not talking about your wife. It's your hair covering with your wife. I mean, that's not such as the airflow. I mean, a house only be the Rabbanan. Majority of
covering,
majority of
your
hair going to the bottom. I mean, like,
I don't think it's English. Why?
Why this? Where the woman is, for a woman, your wife in the house. She's
not. No, she's not. But we're talking when you say Krishna, she doesn't have to cover her collarbone either when she's in the house in front of you. She doesn't have to cover her collarbone.
I don't know. I mean, that's like an objective. That's not airborne inside the house for you, right? It's not a theme level, right?
No.
Anything,
any area of the body that would have to be covered normally would be considered to be the tefach of the isha, which is an erva for Kriyat Shema.
Right.
Kriyat Shema. You're not talking about, when you talk about hair being covered inside versus outside, you're not talking about Kriyat Shema. You're talking about generally.
No.
She, when she's not, when no one, let's say no one say Kriyat Shema.
So from her elbows down, that's permitted, right?
I'm not. I don't want to discuss exactly.
That's the reason why when you go to school, you have some pizza. Is that one of the reasons? Women might come in like half naked, like you know, like.
We have no. We have mechitzas for not well. That's the difference. I'm not getting into that either.
Right.
I mean, no. But the reason for mechitza is that we like in the bis mikdash,
yeah.
They had Ezra's Nashim and Ezra's Yisrael. They had a separate area for the women where, or in the balcony. If the women are a second story, you don't have to have one a thing that covers up to their necks. If they're on a balcony, you can have come much lower, because that's a physical separation. The issue of the mechitza does, in some circumstances, also help if women are in fact coming not properly dressed. But generally speaking, the mechitza is meant to be a physical separation, not a visual separation entirely. But the post can be talking about how high it has to be a proper separation.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we time-wise? Are we up? Time up?
I think so.
Well, oh, yeah, 6 minutes.
It
is certainly, because if you're going to say Dvarim Shebekdusha and the women are not coming with their hair covered, yeah, it would be a problem. Okay. But they do distinguish nowadays whether or not that'd be an issue by hair. But otherwise, it would be a problem for hair, saying Kriyat Shema. Okay. So, hold on. So that's the Rav Sheshes. So, Amar of Chissa. So that's the first statement. So the first statement is, if you're saying Kriyat Shema, even with your wife, even with one's wife, one tefach cannot be uncovered of something which is normally covered. Okay. Now, next, Amar of Chissa. Shok b'isha erva. Rav Chista says that the thigh, well, the shok, commonly translated as the thigh, the isha is also erva. That's something that cannot be exposed. Okay, we're not talking about Krishna here necessarily. Shenamar, gali shok avrina harof. It's referring to the embarrassment that's going to come upon, I think it's Bavel, that they're going, one of the things they're going to be having is it says they're going to be, their shok is going to be revealed. Uksiv, and it says afterwards, Tigaler vasech, your erva is going to be revealed. The gam tir echer vasech, and you're going to see your embarrassment. Meaning, you see here that the two, you put the two pesukim together, their thigh is revealed, and then it says your erva is revealed. It must be the thigh is an erva, or the shok is erva. The makam erva has to be covered at all times. So what is shok? So here also there is a discussion in the poskim. We're doing chulin, right? If you're doing dafyom, we're doing chulin. So generally speaking, actually, it's discussed by the shok and the animal. That's generally understood to be the lower leg, right? Below the knee. So there is a discussion. But generally speaking, we assume that the thigh, when it says shok by a person, refers to the thigh, the upper leg. There is a debate among the poskim about whether women have to cover down to the knee, whether women have to cover down to the ankle. That's the machlokas the poskim. So different communities, I guess, have different customs as to what they accept. But certainly, whatever you define the shok, that has to be covered. That has to be covered. Okay, next part of the Gemara. Amr Shmuel, kol b'isha erva. The voice of woman is an erva. You've heard of kol isha, right? So kol b'isha erva means her voice is also considered to be something, right, which draws the person's desire. How we see that, Shinamar says in Shir HaShirim, ki kolech arev umarech na'ava. Your voice is pleasant, is pleasing, and your beauty is pleasing. So it connects the two. You see that the same way one's beauty and the voice are the same. The voice of a woman is also considered to be an erva. Okay, again, a very big discussion among the poskim beyond our ability tonight to discuss. So what do we consider to be kol b'isha erva? What about if it's not live? What about is the recording considered to be also the erva? If it's two voices together, is that considered to be erva? A big discussion among the poskim also. Just in general, a woman's voice is considered to be something which should not be heard by a man because it's erva in song, not like just her talking. That's not her talking. Okay, Amar of Shesha, Sha'ar bi'isha erva. Okay, the hair of a woman is also erva. Shenemar, Serech ke'eder aizim. Because your hair is like the beauty of the hair of the goat. Don't tell your wife this.
Yeah.
But in the Shir Shirim, it was a beautiful allegory. But don't go home and say your shape looks like it came off a goat. but the pasuk is referring to the se'ar being something beautiful, something to gaze upon that would be beautiful. And again, because of that, again, the is also considered to be a dover, a makam of erva. All right, maybe we could stop here. We can go on to the next two dots. Should we go on? We have like five, few minutes. Let's go on to the next two dots. Let's get to the next part. We'll get to the bottom of the page. Okay, Amar Chanina. Ani Risi es Rebbe Shetelot Tfilav. I saw the Rebbe hung his tefillin on like a post. So Mesei, yes, fine, Bryce, Kasha. Hatolot Tfilav Yitlu Lo Chaya. If a person hangs his tefillin on a post, it's like he's hanging his life. Like he's going to die. It's like killing yourself. So Dorshe Chamuros are those who explain, Rashi explains, the psukim, they try and like uncover, and those things which are really like tied up and unclear in the Torah, they expose the hardest psukim to understand. So Amru, they said, "V'hayu chayecha tuluim lach mineged." Your life is hanging to you from the neged. So ze hatolat tzilav, that refers to someone who hangs his tefillin. It's like he's hanging his chayav, he's hanging his life. To hang your tefillin is so inappropriate. It's like you're hanging your life. Hang yourself. You don't hang yourself. You don't want to hang your tefillin. So look, Hasha. So first, the point is that he saw Rebbe doing this. So Rebbe the Nasi doing this. How can you see Rebbe the Nasi do this? It's inappropriate. So one answer is Habaritsua. To hang it by the straps with the batim, the actual where the tefillin partials are, hanging down below. That's ridiculous. That's disgusting. Ha, the ksitza refers to the actual batim of the tefillin, so that they're hanging up on top, and the ledge and the straps are hanging down, that's not so bad. That's allowed. That's what he did. Another answer by Zema, loshna ritsu of loshna ksitza. You shouldn't hang it upside down the right, well, now which way it's upside down, right? You shouldn't hang it by the straps, you shouldn't hang it by the batim, neither one. The chitala Rebbe did it ksitza tal, he did it inside the bag. You can hang the tefillin inside the bag, that was okay. Like, wait, you couldn't hang the tefillin from its bag? Obviously, you can hang it on the hook. What's wrong with that? It's an obvious thing you should be able to do that. No, I might have thought, does anyone ever hang a Sefer Torah hanging on the air on a post? No, no, no one does that. You have to rest it on the platform of some sort. You know, so you even put like a strap on it, but you at least certainly have to have it resting on something physical. We do not hang the Sefer Torah on straps dangling in the air. So, no, but this is what?
This is a wall hanging.
Wait, no, we're talking Torah. You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to put a Torah hanging in the air. So the answer is, you might have thought the same would be true by tefillin. The answer is no. Tefillin's allowed to be hung in its bag in the air, but Torah is not. But what do
you think?
You
think you hang in the Zizah?
Yeah.
You should hang a tefillin.
Which is more kedusha? Yes. First of all, mezuzah is not hanging. Mezuzah is attached.
Well, here you have a case and you're hanging it.
It's very different. You don't hang your mezuzah on the side of your thing. You attach it to the. It's part of the wall. You attach. Meaning you don't. Put this out. If you have a hook on the side of your doorpost, you hang on the hook your mezuzah. That doesn't count. You have to have it nailed in or glued on tight. We're not talking about gluing or attaching with nails your tefillin to the post.
Right.
We're referring to hanging.
Maybe you want some, like you would say.
No, we're referring to back.
Short-term.
Sorry?
Long-term versus short-term.
Yeah, it has to be affixed in a way that would last. Yeah, right. That's the difference. Yeah. But by Torah, even if it was affixed very strongly, you would not be allowed to have your tefillin, your Sefer Torah hanging. It should have its bottom on the platform. The bottom of the Sefer Torah has to be on the platform as the highest honor, show of respect. And that does not have to be the case for your tefillin in this case. Okay, so we'll stop here. We're at the very, very bottom. And we'll pick up from here next.